The mass extinction utterly changed life on Earth. But as one world ended, another unfolded. A great deal of the world's present diversity of life emerged following the catastrophic events of 66 million years ago. And many different groups of birds evolved to reclaim a life in the trees. The birds around us today are living proof of nature's resiliency. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
Thank you. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Radio. Burnaby. Bum, 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 bum.
My name is Peter Jones.
And I'm Jen Hoffman.
And, oh, look at that. We've got Tom Prout right in the middle of us. That must mean you're listening to Tell Us a Tale live from the Prism here in Charlottesville, Virginia. We are here with members of the Jan Smith Band, including the wonderful Tom Prout, as we go about slaying giants. And actually, we're going to be telling you a tale now that a friend of ours, Pete Seeger, told us a couple of years ago when he was here for the Virginia Festival of the Book called Abiyoyo. And this story actually takes place up in a part of New York State where Pete Seeger lives in the Catskill Mountains. Has anyone ever heard of the Catskills?
I've heard of the Catskills.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, actually.
Has anyone else ever heard of the Catskills?
Yeah, there's some folks out there who have.
Good, yeah. It's okay to speak out because, of course, here's a little hint for you. On the radio, we can't just see you shaking your heads up and down. There you go.
So this is not like school.
That's right.
School, you can shout it out. I mean, here you can shout it out.
Just don't twist and shout. That's all we ask. No, we're actually going to be telling you a tale from the Catskills, and it's all about a father and his daughter. Now, these two lived in a little town called Monticello, actually, where I think Jen actually went to camp once upon a time.
Well, I didn't go to camp there, but my camp was near there, actually. Yeah, but I would spend some time with friends up in that area in some little bungalows in the summer.
Well, this story took place in Monticello long before Jen came along, probably a good 20 years before she was born, because it took place in the early 1800s.
Oh, you're funny.
But this father and daughter lived on their own because, unfortunately, the little girl's mama had died when she was just 3 or 4 years old. Of course, this made the daughter very sad. And there wasn't anything that the father wouldn't do to make his daughter laugh. But there were only two things that would make her laugh, and they always got him into trouble. The first was that he had a magic trick that he loved doing. He would do it all the time, and that was make things disappear. Sometimes they'd be walking through the woods, because they lived up near the mountains, as I told you, and he'd see a squirrel clambering up into a tree, and he'd pull out his magic wand and go, and the whole tree would disappear, and that squirrel would just fall down on its back, drop all the nuts it had in its mouth. Well, that little girl would just laugh and laugh. Sometimes they'd be walking down the road, and somebody would go by on horseback. And the father would pull out his wand if his daughter wasn't smiling, and he'd go, whoop, and the whole horse would disappear, and that poor fellow would fall down onto the ground. But the trick that got him in the most trouble was every evening. Well, I got to tell you, the father was not the best cook in the world. So they would go into the local inn in the small town of Monticello, and they would eat dinner. And inevitably, that little girl would start thinking about her mama just as they started to eat. So he'd look around, and he'd look for somebody who was about to drink a glass of water or maybe a little glass of ale, pull out his magic wand, and whoosh, make that glass disappear, leaving all the liquid just drop all over those poor folks. Well, that finally did it. Those folks didn't want him around anymore, so he promised he wouldn't do any more magic. And that would have been okay, but there was one other thing that got those townspeople upset, and that was bad banjo playing. Now, this little girl, her mom had been one of the best banjo players in the world. And the Brown family was famous all over the world for their banjo playing, at least for the ladies. Now, little Allison, she'd never really learned how to play banjo because her mom had died too young. So she had to teach herself, and her pa didn't know how to play. So every day she'd just start sitting there plunking that banjo. But, you know, a bad banjo is not much worse than bad banjo playing. And those folks got tired of it. And all she'd do all day long to think about her mom was walk up and down the streets playing that banjo. Well, she tried to play it well, but, you know, bad banjo playing, as I said, it's just bad. That's why I stopped playing. Well, between the magic wand and the bad banjo playing, those townspeople finally got sick and tired of those two. So they chased them out of that poor town.
Get out of here. Get out of here. Get out of here. Get out of town. Get out of town.
Well, those two got ostracized. Anybody know what ostracized is? Ostracized is meant they got, we'll just say they got kicked out and they weren't allowed back into town. That's the easiest way to define that word for the story. So this little girl and her pa, they went off and lived just outside of Monticello, up near where all the mountains and the Catskills were. But this is actually a good thing, because then the father could make things disappear and no one would get angry. And she could play her banjo, and the father didn't mind. He loved hearing that banjo playing. So she'd just sit there and practice all day and night. And she got better. Now, all around those Catskills, there's a famous story, because you'd hear this loud, what sounded like thunder throughout the mountains. Now, in another little town called Sleepy Hollow, just up the road, there was a legend that there were some fairies that went bowling. In fact, there was a fellow by the name of Rip Van Winkle who went up into the mountains. But that was a whole different story. But in Little Monticello, it was thought that there were giants who lived up in the mountains. Now, these weren't bad giants. Well, except for one of them, whose name was Abiyoyo. Abiyoyo, he was known to have, well, a long time ago anyway. He'd come down out of the mountains, and he'd grab anything that moved. Cows, and sheep and pigs, horses, and sometimes even boys and girls if they were around. But nobody had seen Abba Yo-Yo, this huge giant, for a couple hundred years. So he'd really become just more of a legend and a bedtime story for all the boys and girls. And that's in fact what he was, or so they thought, until one morning. It was a very strange morning. It was very heavy air, and the sun. It was almost like blood red in color. And then a huge shadow came out across the sun over the mountains. And people were just bringing their animals out into the meadows to let them start feeding for the day. And that's when they saw him coming. Abba Yo-Yo was coming out of the mountains. He must have been 15 stories high. Well, people started screaming. They couldn't believe it.
Run for your lives! Run for your lives! Run for your lives!
And they ran every which way, trying to get their livestock in, getting all those kids and boys and girls in. But that didn't stop Abba Yo-Yo. He just kept coming out of the mountains. And he saw some sheep. So we went down and picked him up and gobbled him right down in one swallow. Then he saw some horses. And he swallowed those down too. And then he saw some cows. Well, just then, the little girl, Allison, she woke up and she heard all these folks screaming. She ran out of the little cabin that she and her paw lived in and looked for her dad, her paw.
What's going on, paw? What's coming over the field, paw?
Well, sweetie, I think that's Abba Yo-Yo, that giant I tell you about every night before bed.
Oh, no. Well, can't we do something? Can't we help all the people from the town? What can we do, paw?
I'm thinking, well, you know, if I could just get that giant to lie down, I know I can make him disappear with my magic trick.
Pa, I have an idea.
What's that?
Come with me.
All right. And with that, little Allison, she grabbed her banjo and ran off towards that giant. And the father, he grabbed his magic wand and followed close behind. Well, the townspeople, they saw that those two were running towards Abba Yo-Yo and not away, and they yelled out,
"Don't go near him! Don't go near him! Go away! Go away!"
But that didn't stop them. That little girl ran right up to Abba Yo-Yo and saw his huge toes. Underneath those toes, he was so filthy that he had bushes and trees growing underneath those toenails. And worms and snakes and other kind of bugs, tarantulas, were coming out from between his toes. And then she looked up and he had a runny nose and, oh, she got covered in, well, what we like to call snot. Well, that little girl, she looked up. She saw him, and he looked down and started to bend down to grab her. But just then, she started playing her banjo and singing a song.
Abba Yo-Yo, Abba Yo-Yo.
Well, the giant, he'd never heard anybody sing about him before, so he stopped, and he listened a little bit more.
Abba Yo-Yo, Abba Yo-Yo.
Well, he started dancing. He liked that song so much. And the more he danced, the faster she sang and the faster he played. And he kept dancing. He was going so fast, he finally lost control and he fell down straight onto the ground. And the father jumped up with his magic wand and went, whoosh, and Abba Yo-Yo disappeared. Well, the townsfolk, they looked around. Abba Yo-Yo was gone. So they ran out towards them, hooping and hollering. They were so happy.
Hooray! Hooray! He's gone! He's disappeared! Hooray!
And then they grabbed a hold of little Allison Brown and her pa. They carried him back into town. And to celebrate, they all just started singing that song, which they do to this very day.
Abba Yo-Yo, Abba Yo-Yo.
My name is Peter Jones.
And I'm Jen Hoffman.
And you're listening to Tell Us a Tale, live from the legendary Prism here in Charlottesville, Virginia. We are here with members of the Jan Smith Band here at the Prism. You know, I just have to tell you, the Prism is an amazing place. Recently, I was here for a show, and I got to hear this wonderful Klezmer Mountain Boy bluegrass group with Margot Leverett, who plays a wonderful clarinet, terrific founding member of the Klezmatics. And she and this band were here recently and put on a show that just was unbelievable to hear bluegrass and klezmer put together. And that's the kind of music that you hear here at the Prism. And you can find out more about the great shows that go on here at theprism.org throughout the calendar year or the school year here at the University of Virginia. So if you ever have a chance to be up here in Charlottesville, I definitely recommend you make a trip over to the Prism. Well, we are here anyway. I just want to tell you, I was so amazed at that show. We're actually here, speaking of bluegrass, to tell you an Appalachian tale right now involving a giant. This is a Jack tale. It's called Jack and the Giant Chaser. It's an Appalachian tale, as I mentioned, retold by Ken and Joanne Compton, and that is published by Holiday House.
Once in a day, Jack was returning home after running off some highway robbers. As he ambled down the road by the creek, minding his own business, mind you, he spied 7 catfish swimming along the bank. Jack was feeling hungry, so he leaned over, picked up a smooth rock, and heaved it at those catfish. Well, wouldn't you know, one rock hit all 7 and killed them dead.
Oh, my.
Well, Jack cleaned them, cooked them, and had himself a fine dinner, don't you know.
Oh, that was so nice.
Well, after he'd eaten, Jack traveled on until he came to his own hometown. And there, he noticed most of his neighbors and kinfolk were gathered in front of the general store. Jack walked up to them and announced,
"I'm back!"
Well, nobody paid the slightest bit of attention, so he said just a little bit louder this time,
"Yep, I'm back, and I had me a fine adventure."
When the townsfolk continued to ignore him, Jack hollered,
"I just killed me 7 with one blow."
Well, that got folks' attention. Suddenly, everybody crowded around Jack.
Seven with one blow.
Well, the townspeople made such a fuss that Jack didn't have the heart to tell them it was only 7 catfish that he killed. Well, finally, the mayor got everybody to quiet down so he could make a speech. He called Jack up to the steps of the store and said,
"Jack, since you've been gone, boy, we've had nothing here but trouble. Seems there's this mean old giant that's taken to living up there on Balsam Mountain, and he don't take too kindly to us down here."
"Why, last week he come off the mountain and stole 3 of my best milk cows.
He stomped my whole field of corn and ruined half the rhubarb, too.
You ought to see how he pushed over my barn. None of us has had any peace for weeks."
The mayor hooked his arm around Jack's shoulders and declared,
"What we need here is a giant chaser, and I think you're just the one for the job there, Jack."
Well, with that, Jack's neighbors and kinfolk whooped and hollered and slapped poor old Jack on the back. Well, Jack wasn't so sure he was cut out to deal with giants. But since everybody thought he was a hero, he figured he'd have to try and act like one.
So
the next morning, Jack got up bright and early and set off to Balsam Mountain to find that giant, don't you know. When he got up there, the giant wasn't home. So Jack set himself down bold as you please on the front porch to wait for him. Wasn't long before the giant appeared over the ridge carrying Miss Palmer's 2 prize pigs, 1 in each hand.
"Howdy there. Howdy yourself there, boy. What you doing there on my front porch there, little man? Huh?
I'm hunting me a giant. You seen one of them around here?"
"Seen one? Don't you know I am a giant, boy?"
"I don't know. Most of the giants I seen are lots bigger than you. But I reckon you're the one I'm aiming to get rid of."
"What makes you think you're a match for me, little fella?"
"Why, I just reckon he'd heard of me. I'm Jack, and just yesterday I killed me 7 with one blow."
"7? Was that a fight?"
Yeah, that's why I say it's saving. Of course, I'm kind of the small one in the family. I'm the runt. If my daddy was to catch up with you, I'd hate to think what'd happen.
Well, you must be tougher than you look, Jack. Before we commenced the fighting, how'd you like to have something to eat?
Why, that's right neighborly of you. I reckon I can wait till this afternoon to take care of you.
Now that old giant aimed to find out just how tough Jack was. So he went on inside and got two huge buckets.
Let's go on down to the creek and fetch you up some water to cook with, Jack.
Jack knew there was no way he could even pick up the two buckets, much less lug them up the hill full of water. But he had himself an idea. When they got to the creek, Jack waded out into the middle and reached down to the bottom.
What you doing there, boy?
I'm just fixing to grab a hold of the creek so I can drag it up to your front door. No sense carrying just a little bit of water up there.
Whoa there, Jack. I don't want the creek that close to my house. It might flood me out someday. Just you grab one of those buckets and we'll be done.
Not me. If I can't carry the creek, I'll not be caught carrying that little bit of water. What if my kinfolk saw me?
So the giant grabbed up both of those buckets himself and toted them up the hill to the cabin. And after he got dinner started, the giant said to Jack,
Let you and me go outside and play a little mumbly peg while the greens are cooking, boy.
All right by me.
So they went outside and the giant pulled out his pocket knife and he threw it clear across the yard and straight into the ground.
Now it's your turn now, little man.
So Jack walked over to the knife and he sized it up.
That thing's nearly as tall as me. Probably weighs 150 pounds. That's 30 pounds heavier than me. No way I can pull that thing out of the ground, much less throw it. What am I going to do? I got an idea.
Looking out across the valley and the far mountains, Jack hollered.
Hey, Uncle!
Who you calling Uncle? I ain't your kin.
I ain't talking to you. I'm talking to my uncle who lives on the far side of those mountains. He could use a good knife like this one, so I figured I'd just toss it on over to him.
Hold on now, Jack. That's my good knife, and I'm not ready to part with it yet. You just toss it right here in the yard.
Well, if I can't throw it where I please, I'm not going to throw it at all. What if my kinfolk saw me?
So the giant went inside too and dished up two plates of cornbread, greens, and ham. Then he and Jack sat down to eat. While they were eating, Jack began cocking his head from side to side and glancing out the window. He kept doing this until it started to make the giant kind of nervous.
What are you looking at there, boy?
Why, nothing. I'm just looking to see what I can see.
Well, cut it out. You're starting to rile me.
They kept on eating and eating, and all the while Jack's eyes were glued to the window. Once he muttered out of the side of his mouth,
"Yeah, here they come.
What you see out of that window there, little man?
Oh, it's nothing. But if I was you, I'd hurry up and finish my dinner.
Now hold your horses there, boy. First, you better tell me what you spot out that window.
Oh, it's nothing, I tell you. Nothing but my daddy, my two big brothers, and about two dozen of my other kinfolk.
He said he's the smallest one in the family. Land's sake, if all of them catch up with me at once, I'm as good as dead for sure. You gotta hide me, little man. You gotta hide me.
Now, why would I want to do that?
Oh, please. Please don't let him catch me. I'll leave the valley and you'll never see me again.
I don't know about that. You promise you won't come back?
Oh, I promise. I promise. Please.
Well, all righty then. Quick, jump into that big old barrel over there in the corner and I'll see what I can do to get shed of him.
Took some doing, but after a lot of shoving and squeezing, the giant was finally crammed into the barrel, and Jack slammed the lid on as tightly as he could. Then Jack began making all kinds of commotion in the cabin, pretending like his kinfolk were really there. He turned over chairs and threw pots and pans around and dumped drawers in the floor, and all the while he was hollering and screeching like it was 20 men. Then Jack shook the giant's barrel real hard and shouted,
I tell you, he ain't here, I tell you. There ain't no giants in this cabin. I promise there ain't none.
Finally, Jack rolled the barrel to the door and shoved it off the porch. Jack ran what? After it as it bounced and bumped all the way down the mountain until it hit a tree.
Oh.
Out crawled the giant.
How much obliged you, little man. You saved my life. Oh.
Oh, it's nothing, but you better hightail it out of here before those boys come back looking for you. I'll tell you that right now, I do.
All right.
And so the giant bolted across that creek, over the ridge, and past the state line. And don't you know that was the last Jack or anybody in those parts ever saw that bothersome creature.
We're going to close out this half hour of Tell Us a Tale here at the Prism with a tune from two members of the Jan Smith Band. And they're going to be doing one of my favorite traditional tunes called Old Slewfoot.
One, two,
some